of buying time, killing people that's in line. Lower class and social slime, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. Caesar shit, force of air. Fuck them back, it's only for they bomb. They shoot, they kill, they mass on parade. They burn the kids, no one makes gun. Trees, lime, to your face. Social slide, they don't matter. Genocide, sick from water, sick from air. Making money, they don't care. See their shit, force a bear. Fuck them back, that's only fair. They bomb, they shoot, they kill, they mass up from rain. They burn the kids, no more things. Gun, trees, lie to your face. Fight and die, cause God forgives. Yeah.
Welcome to the show. I'm your host, Ron Stevens, and this is Rock the Boat right here on UCY.TV, and I'm your host for the next hour. It is, what is today anyways, March the 9th, and so it is. It's cooled down a little bit and windy compared to what it's been the last bit. But anyways, I had kind of a weird week so far. Monday, we went over to Michael Schmidt, the raw milk farmer's trial for obstruction of a peace officer, I believe it was, from a raid the police and the Ministry of Agriculture, the last in a multitude of raids against the farm over the last two decades. And they were in court on Monday, and lots of procedural problems and whatnot. And then Michael was sick as a dog with the flu, so they put the trial off until this morning. And this morning there was a few procedural things, and then the judge was explaining how it's going to work. And just as he was finishing up on that and getting ready to commence the trial, George Hugh, one of the accused, walked into the court. And this has been going on for 17 months. And it's really weird because I don't understand why they did what they did. The police gave a summons to one of the five that were charged and then told him to contact the other parties and tell them to come to the police station and pick up their summons, like it's his problem. So that was kind of a strange way of going about getting summonses out. And so Enos Martin George Hugh did not, they were waiting to get served. And they went out to Enos's farm sometime later and picked up Enos and took him to the police station and gave him his summons and his charge and let him go. He went back to his farm and was only back there about an hour. He was working out in the field or whatever, in the bush or whatever, and this van comes in with two police officers in it and tell him that they're there for the warrant. And he explains to them he just got home and he'd already been served the warrant or the summons, excuse me. And he told them that the paperwork was sitting in the truck And the police apparently called him a liar in that, and then handcuffed him and roughed him up. And then after they did that, they made a call, and it turned out Enos was correct. He had already been served with the summons. And so they messed up his wrist really, really bad. He went to the hospital. The doctor was disgusted, took a bunch of pictures. And then Enos charged the two officers for assault. And the police didn't show up in court and for the first appearance. And the judge was very upset, and which is kind of weird because the Crown, because Enos brought this charge forward because they wouldn't charge the police. So he brought this personal charge against them, and the way this works is that the Crown cannot be involved in the first meeting between the judge and the accused. The Crown attorney can sit in, but he can't be involved in it. But in this case, the Crown attorney was there representing the two officers that failed to appear in the court, and was trying to make his point that the charges should be thrown out. But the judge said that had she not seen the pictures of Enos's wrists and the damage, that she may have said okay, but she was disgusted and she wanted to know why the cops weren't there. And she said that, you come back here at such and such a date, and if those officers are not in this court, I will issue a bench warrant for them. So what happens here in Ontario anyways is that you can bring a private prosecution. If the police won't lay charge, you can go ahead and bring a private prosecution forward. And like I was saying, in the first meeting, the Crown can sit in, but the Crown has nothing to say. They can't even talk, but in this case, they broke those rules. So when they came, but what happens when you come back the second time? They call it a private prosecution. Yeah, you can bring it forward, but you can't prosecute. When you come back the second time, the Crown takes over the prosecution. Well, the Crown in the first instance was there. He broke the rules. The police didn't show up. And so when they came back the second time, that's when the Crown prosecutor takes over the private prosecution, which makes it no longer a private prosecution. And so when they come back the second time, the prosecutor just stands up and says, I don't think it's in the public interest, so I'm going to throw the charges out. This is a protection racket. And it's a fraud because, I talked to the Attorney General's office about this. They said, well, yeah, you can bring a private prosecution. And I said, not according to your website. You can bring it forward. But then the Crown takes it away from you. So it fails in this idea of a private prosecution because it's lifted from you. You filed the papers, you paid the court fees, you did all this stuff. The justice felt there was enough evidence to bring it forward. The judge wondered where the police were and wanted to bring it forward. She was disgusted with the pictures, but then the Crown just steps in because they take it over and boom. It's not in the public interest. Well, the public interest is the corporate interest, the Crown's interest, not in the Crown's interest to prosecute the Crown employees. Very difficult to get any kind of justice for an individual in this province. Now, having said that, there's a good chance that we have police listening to the show tonight. I was in the courthouse today, and was discussing something with the police, and They were all cordial today, which is nice to see. And so we discussed some stuff, and I actually invited, you know, one of them or any of them to come on the show. And they put me over to another officer who's in charge of the media, who I know. So I'm going to call him and call Kevin and see if he'll do the show. And maybe we can talk some of this stuff out. I always tell the police, you know, like we're all basically the same, right? You know, and we all want justice and we all want peace officers. But this corporate nonsense is over the top. Now, why is Michael Schmidt being persecuted like this for over two decades? Simple. The government or the crown, who has the monopoly on the milk in Ontario through the Milk Marketing Board, doesn't want any competition. Period. And it's got nothing whatsoever to do with the safety of the milk. Michael has proven over the last 23 years that his milk is perfectly safe, as is his raw cheese products. No one has become ill, even slightly, in 23 years. But they keep persecuting him and raiding him on the idea that it's a safety problem. Apparently not. What it is, it's a competition problem. And I know this to be a fact because I attended a milk symposium at the University of Guelph last year, I guess. And one of the government agents, someone in the audience asked the question, you know, like if the government saw, you know, money in this, would they legalize it then? And the answer was yes. But to date, we don't see how we make money at this. So we're not interested in it. So it had nothing whatsoever to do with safety. Never did. It's about competition. So today was a little bit odd when George showed up. I had talked to George, I don't know, I think maybe before the trial started on the phone, and I asked him if he was going to show up. And he said, it's a possibility, it's a real possibility. And now the police know where George is. I mean, George has six farms. He's an organic farmer. And they know where all of his farms are. It ain't hard to find George. So why he wasn't given the summons is beyond me. But he wasn't going to go and do their work for them. Because they didn't do anything wrong. But anyways, the judge gets through this preliminary stuff there this morning, and George shows up. And it was nice to see him. I actually haven't seen George since the day of the raid, which was October of 2015. I've talked to him once in a while, but I haven't seen him. And George is in his 70s now, and he's still getting hammered around. And he hadn't hurt anybody. He's a farmer. So when I saw George walk by me, just sit in the pew in front of me, I give him a shot in the arm. And just before they commenced the trial, George stood up and announced that he was there. And the judge didn't seem too happy about it. And so the judge, George was trying to talk, and the judge was kind of shouting him down. And then he got very boisterous and told him to leave the court. Now, usually when that happens, you know, like, can't remember, he said, told him to leave the court or get him out of my court or whatever he said. It's not really that important. But normally when that happens, you're going to get a bunch of police jumping you to help you out of the court. So when George turned, I got up in front of him and just asked everybody to chill out. And everybody was very, I got to take my hat off. Everybody was very well behaved. The police were very well behaved today. And I don't know if it had anything to do with the pitcher, or not the pitcher, but there was a tractor out parked outside the courthouse with a round bale on it and the plastic skin around it with stop police brutality written on it. So I don't know if that had anything to do with the calmness or not. The only thing that I saw that kind of irritated me, once we got outside the courtroom, I started taking pictures, and a lady officer told me I had to take the camera outside the building. And we'd already been told before when we were in court, because we asked the judge what the protocol was, and he said we had every right to take pictures in the common areas in the courthouse. And so she grabbed a hold of my camera strap and was pretty adamant that I had to take it outside. And we're having this discussion that, no, I have no intentions of taking it outside, and I have every right to take the photographs, which I intend to do. And another officer came over and said, well, it's a request. And I said, well, it's a request, I don't have to do it. So he finally asked the female cop to, I actually told her, I said, if you don't take your hand off my camera strap, I'll be charged for assault. At which time she was told just to kind of back out of there. And so got some pictures taken and that. And then they took George downstairs between the floors, where there's another common area. And there's a small meeting room on that floor, of which George was taken into. And they had some discussion. I went back upstairs for a bit, came back down. They were about done what they're doing. And they're going to escort George to the jail in Durham, Ontario, which is West Grey, which is where Michael Schmidt's father, the co-op, is, and process him. And it was agreed that, I guess I was talking to one of the other accused that had been already had his case dismissed. And by the time I got down there, I guess somebody had handcuffs out, and Enos told him it wasn't going to work. And I told him it wasn't necessary. And in fact, you don't have the authority to put the handcuffs on him. I was reading some stuff. And unless the one that you're dealing with is either massively verbally abusing you or threatening to physically abuse you, they have no right to put the handcuffs on you. And so they were. I got to say, the police were pretty good today, you know. I mean, George is 71 at least, I think, maybe 72. And he's been beaten up by the police before. That's a known fact. And so today, no handcuffs on George. They escorted him out of the courthouse to a waiting SUV to transport him to Durham to process him. And I found it rather ironic, because it's a police SUV, and scrawled across the doors is community partner. Well, if there is any police listening tonight, you best really delve into the word community, because this is all part of the UN globalist lingo, a part of the global to local program. And none of it is good. So I just assume this partnering thing is straight out of the United Nations. This community thing is straight out of the United Nations. And what is their goal? The end of nation states. And it is not these gentlemen who produce organic food for people that's the problem. The real problem lays at the municipal level, and it's the municipalities that contract with the police. And that is a problem there. Because even though you're police, you're still, brothers, sisters, mothers, fathers, The plan coming out of the municipal halls, which is the UN globalist, global to local, giving the power to the global, is destroying this nation. And you got kind of a conflict there because you're contracted by the municipality. But they're the ones that you need, really, really need to understand what they're up to and take a very, very close look at what they're up to, because they, not the farmer, the people, the administrators, the CAOs or city council or city managers, whatever you want to refer them to, and we have the documents, they're specifically schooled or trained in how to implement the UN globalist agendas at the local level without people understanding what is going on. Now, the council is just the front, okay? Because it's not the council that comes up with any of these ideas. It is the administrator, which is the CAO or city manager, all trained in deceptive practices to implement UN globalist agendas at the local level. So this is where the police really need to put their eyeballs. The farmers, they ain't caused anybody any trouble. So there's no need to persecute these guys the way that's been going on. So having said that, I do have to commend, I've been in that courthouse. My brother-in-law drove me over there because I'm presently walking because of some lies. And it's all I can call them is lies that ended up with me not driving right now. But we'll get that sorted out. But my brother-in-law took me over there, and it was weird because when I was going to court for this driving under suspension thing, which I was assaulted twice, and the judge ran away twice, and in the end I'd had enough of this nonsense and left, at which point they found me guilty. But my brother-in-law, who really doesn't ever have much to do with court, maybe a couple of times when he's a teenager, but other than that, no. But, you know, he took me to the court that day, and I was assaulted. And I actually phoned the OPP because it was a Hanover policeman that assaulted me. And he just happened to be, when I tracked this guy down, he just happened to be part of the security tail for the Queen at the Winter Olympics in Vancouver. So, you know, I phoned the OPP, called the assault in. And they arrived, I don't know, a long time later, probably, I don't know, it was 20 or 40 minutes later. It was a long time anyways. I mean, considering there was OPP in the courthouse, they could have just called one of them and had it dealt with. But by the time they got there, the assaulting officer was long gone, nowhere to be found. And the two young officers that came, said they were here about the alleged assault, and at which time a lady who I think was from Paisley, Ontario, came out of the court and said it wasn't alleged, it was an assault because I witnessed it. And I said, great, take her statement. They refused to do so. Absolutely refused to take her statement. I said, well, if you don't have a piece of paper and pen, I'll go get it. There's lots of chairs there. Sit down with her and take her statement. And I was told by the two young police officers that they were there to make us an offer. And I go, what are you talking about? She's there, take her statement. Well, no, we're not going to do it. Here's our offer. If you want us to take a statement, you have to come to the police station to do it. Now, I don't know the history of this lady or what's happened to her in the past, but she said that she was the last place she would ever go is to their police station. Okay, so she doesn't want to go to your police station to take the statement. Again, they refuse. No, that's our offer, and if you don't accept it, tough. this is really bad gamesmanship. And that's when I just decided to leave. But it was so bizarre there that my brother-in-law, you know, I used to tell him some of the things that went on in court when we went through our three-day trial. And he couldn't believe it. He thought it was exaggerating, right? He really, he was so, oh, geez, you know, like they're over there, but he's exaggerating the hell out of it. But after that day when he took me over there and spent, I don't know, a lot, we were there an hour and a half or something. When we left, he said, I thought you were always exaggerating this stuff. You weren't, you know, saying it well enough. You weren't exaggerating. You were low-keying it. He said, this place is evil. Then it is evil. It's evil because it's corporate, and it's evil because it's legal, and it's evil because it's adversarial. And if you look up the word adversary, what comes up? The word Satan. So yeah, it's evil, all right. So he drove me over there this morning to the court, and I said, "You coming in, or is it?" He said, "I really don't want to go in there." He says, it just shakes me to the core when I walk in that place, especially after what you went through. And this is supposed to be our justice system. And my brother-in-law doesn't want to go in the building even. He went in a couple of times, I guess, and just into the front part of it. And he said, I was in there. I just got the willies. I had to get out. And that's the problem. But that's the legal system. It's not law. It's the legal system. So I called Enos a little bit before the show because I left after they took George away, or when they loaded George in the SUV to take him to process him. And I guess Enos went over and with him. And, you know, he said, you know, George, he brought George back to the courthouse. And I said, so now George is part of the trial, right? No. No, because they're pushing to get this in under the 18 months. So I said, well, what's with George? Did they dismiss his case? Because he wasn't on the docket today, and nobody was looking for him today. So what's going on? I said, no, they're going to set another trial for George, another separate trial. So another waste of money, time, and effort for no particular reason. So hopefully they end up quashing the charges against Farmer George, is what he's known as, because this would be ludicrous to put these Michael and other two gentlemen through a five-day trial, and they will find them not guilty because there's no evidence of guilt, and then turn around and drag George in there for another lengthy trial. It's ludicrous, but then that's the legal system. See, none of these gentlemen caused anybody any harm. Therefore, in law, they wouldn't be in court. And if they were, if this was law and they were in court, there would be a jury sitting there. Let no man judge you. And no man used to be able to judge you. You were judged by a jury of your peers. But the legal system changed all that. And now a man can apparently judge you, but only in the legal system. So it's not fair, it's not justice. It is like my brother-in-law says, it's plain friggin' evil. So hopefully, you know, the police stay calm and understand what the hell's actually going on there. And stay as good as they were today through this. And we'll, you know, try and keep an eye on it. And hopefully everything works out. Can you imagine, though? Can you just imagine? I mean, in your own life. And I'll tell you this, if there's any police listening tonight. Can you imagine being persecuted for 23 years and dragged in and out of court and have your life upended over and over and over again? when you've caused nobody any trouble. Nobody's ever been harmed except for Michael and the people at the co-op, the people that work at the farm, and so on and so forth. You know, I don't even like the term police state. It kind of bothers me. But when nobody has caused any harm, and a government agency can see just, you know, basically target some people and continually persecute them and try to beat them in the ground. I mean, life ain't that long. 23 years of a man's life is a long time to be persecuted unnecessarily, unwarrantedly, and dragged through these trials in the hope that the government can make an example of this man in order to intimidate others to never stand up for what is morally right. And that's a sad, sad statement for a nation such as Canada. Meanwhile, we've blown our borders open, and anybody can roll their asses into this country now, slide on into one of these ever-growing number of sanctuary cities, and that's against the law. It's against the law to be in this country illegally. Yet we have municipalities, and it's grown by the day, putting motions through that they will ignore the federal immigration laws and harbor criminals. So instead of the immigrants coming through the front door and being vetted and having the paperwork done, the municipalities, and this is, again, you can trace this straight back to the United Nations, our municipalities are passing motions that basically sticks the middle finger at the Federal Immigration Department and says, screw you, we're going to harbor criminals. Because if you're not here legally, then you're criminal. And then turn around and make sure that these criminals are availed all services that you are availed to. But you work and you pay taxes and you pay for these services. The illegals do not. So not only are you paying for your services, you're paying for their services, and they're not supposed to be here. How ludicrous can this possibly get? And the really sad part is the police have been told to turn a blind eye and don't ask questions. And they're doing it. But meanwhile, back up in rural Ontario, 23 years later, Michael Schmidt and the others are sitting in a courtroom in a little town of Waukerton, Ontario, where it's open doors for the illegals, but get Michael. Whatever you do, get Michael. Well, they've not got Michael yet. In 23 years, they have not gotten Michael. But they have unlimited funds, apparently, even though this province is $300 billion in the debt. And according to the latest numbers I saw with Kathleen Wynne, who is the premier of this province, trying to skid around this fraud of our electrical system and saying she's going to drop the rates, of which she does not have the capacity to do so, because I've talked to Wynne's office, I've talked to the Ministry of Energy, and both of them say that they cannot tell the OEB what to do. and it's the OEB that sets the rates. The premier can make suggestions. The Ministry of Energy can make suggestions, but none of them can tell the OEB what to do. Now, the OEB was set up as an arm's length board through legislation, making that board untouchable by any other agency in this province. Now, that's a total fraud. Now, if the police would like to discuss the fraud, I would be more than happy to explain it to them in great detail. And it has really not that much to do with the Wynn government, because it was started before 1992, but especially in 1992. I mean, the framework was put together prior to 1992. Ontario Hydro was targeted, and then Bob Rae appointed his godfather, a known criminal, Maurice Strong, to restructure Ontario Hydro. And it was torn apart, sold off, like Maurice Strong always said, you know, he says, I'm all for capitalism for me and my friends, but socialism for everybody else. And they've been picking our bones ever since. And then Enron got involved in it. And Enron was noted for destroying a lot of California by manipulating the electricity prices for their gain, at the expense and the harm and the hurt to so many others, but they were never taken to task on it. So they got involved in the restructuring of Ontario Hydro here in Ontario. And Jim Wilson, the Minister of Energy back in 98, was being flown down to Enron's head office in Houston to discuss how they would like to see Ontario Hydro restructured further and open it up for competition. Well, the first competition that showed up here in Ontario was called Energy Direct. And who was the vice president of Energy Direct? Alec Dadson. And who is Alec Dadson? He's an Enron lobbyist. Now, there was all kinds of problems with Energy Direct, and many police offices had stacks of complaints against Energy Direct, but no charges were ever laid. And this is a problem. You see, the police is a corporation. And the job of the police is to do what? Protect you? Unfortunately, no. Maybe in some rare instances, but then you would protect your fellow man. You would come to the aid of your fellow man if he was in an accident or there was a fire. You would come to the raid as well. So this is just, those actions are the actions that would be taken by any sensible, moral man to help his fellow man. But the main thrust of the police is to serve the corporation, because they take the oath to serve the Queen, which is the Crown, which is the corporation. So that's who they serve, the corporation. Now, who do they protect? The corporation. And that's why a lot of these frauds managed to manifest themselves in the first place and go on to cause untold harm to the good people of this province, including the police officers. Because you got to pay your hydro bill just like everybody else. And this is a massive, massive fraud that needs to be investigated. But nobody wants to investigate it, because you have to protect the fraud. So, you know, I would ask the police to, you know, get on your moral high horses. And when someone tells you to go do something, weigh it before you do it. You have every right to say no. You have every right, if you know that what you're about to do is going to cause harm to someone who has caused no harm and is no threat to anybody, then you have the lawful right to say no. And there ain't jack shit your superior can do. But oh, he can yell at you. He can threaten you with demotion. But he can't do anything about it. And that's a fact. I know there's a lot of police that are concerned about their superiors. They're frustrated. I mean, how many police are taking pharmaceuticals for depression? Tons of them. And that's unfortunate because you are being harmed. We've heard all the stories about the abuse through the RCMP. Well, I can pretty much imagine it's the same in any police force. This is all about international interference in our lives, in the operation of our municipalities and our provinces and federally. And we, the good men and women of this province and this nation, have to come together. This separation and this banging heads against each other is the whole point of how they get to do what they do to us. Divide and conquer. And they have this nation divided badly, and they're coming in to conquer. And from where I sit, this is the Third World War. We've been through the first two world wars. And this is the third one. The only difference between the third and the first two, the third one is a spiritual, psychological war. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Now, I should read this while I got a couple of minutes. If I can find it, this was sometimes things really kind of throw me. I'd never seen this before, and somebody put a picture up on Facebook, because I've been calling this a spiritual psychological war for a long, long time, but then I've been a researcher for a long, long time. And if I can dig this one out while we got time here. This actually states what I've been saying, and that it is a spiritual psychological war. And this apparently was written by Albert Pike, who is a 33 degree Mason. I can just get this to open up. We'll run through it quickly. I'm really hoping I can get a police officer on the show. You know, I was telling them today, I've had a lawyer on the show. I've had a school teacher on the show. And now it's time that we have a police officer on this show. Because we're all in this together. Now, I haven't read this. I just looked at it very, very quickly. So I'm going to read it. I got a few minutes here. I'm going to read this. And this is Albert Pike, April the 5th, or August the 15th, 1871. The First World War must be brought about in order to permit the Illuminati to overthrow the power of the czars in Russia and of making that country a fortress of communism. Atheist communism. The divergences caused by the agents, I guess, of the Illuminati between the British and Germanic empires will be used to foment this war. At the end of the war, communism will be built and used in order to destroy other governments and in order to weaken the religions. Now, World War I, after World War I, we had the League of Nations appear. Now, Mandel House, who was the jackass president who was involved with the formation or the legalization of the Fed, which is the most nefarious thing that was ever set up in the United States, warned that if America didn't sign on to the League of Nations, there would be another war in fairly short order. Now, how would he know that? Simply was told that. House, get this signed, or we'll do it again. And guess what happened? World War II, another depression, a manufactured depression, and then a war. So I will read this. The Second World War must be fermented by taking advantage of the differences between the fascists and the political Zionists. This war must be brought about so that Nazism is destroyed and that the political Zionism be strong enough to institute a sovereign state of Israel in Palestine. During the Second World War, international communism must become strong enough in order to balance Christendom, which would be then restrained and held in check until the time when we would need it for the final social cataclysm. Now, the First World War brought us the League of Nations. The deal was they wanted the League of Nations and a state of Israel. Now, Israel was ordered or offered a state, but that was in Africa, North Africa somewhere. And so, theoretically, the League of Nations, because the United States didn't sign on, and Israel didn't want the location offered to them. They wanted Palestine. So, the First World War got partially what they needed. They got a lot of countries, Canada especially, signed on. But they didn't get the state of Israel, and they didn't get the United States. So, the Second World War, they got the state of Israel and the United Nations. The Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the difference caused by the agents of Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism, the state of Israel, mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on this issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provide a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism. Origin of savagery and of most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere, the citizens obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries will exterminate those destroyers of civilization and the multitude delusion with Christianity, whose deist principles will form that moment, be without compass or direction, anxious for ideal, but without knowing where to render adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought finally out in the public view. The manifestation will result from the general reactionary movement, which will follow the destruction of Christianity and atheism, both conquered and exterminated at the same time. And I've always said, or I've said for more years than I can really remember when I started saying it, but a long time ago, that two things have to be destroyed for these satanic psychopaths to get what they want. One, the American Constitution has to disappear. Now, George Bush said it'd be a lot easier if we didn't have this thing, and besides it's just a damn piece of paper or whatever. And so they're actively destroying the Constitution. The other thing holding them up is Christianity. And in particular, the King James Bible, because the King James Bible is the Bible that the kings and queens, well, it's not the kings and queens that take the oath on the King James Bible. It is the men and women who take the oath on the King James Bible. As in the case of Elizabeth, the present queen, Elizabeth could never have become the queen had she not taken the oath to uphold the law as per the King James Bible, which is basically natural law. Do no harm, you know, do unto others as you wish to do unto them, and so on and so forth. Law is so simple, it's ridiculous. And if the one who took the oath should move away from that law, then they have no authority to rule. And that is the divine right of kings, which was supposed to be the proxies of Christ. Unfortunately, they're hooked up with the Vatican and the popes who designate themselves as the vicar of Christ, but they're really the vicar of Satan. This whole world's upside down. Now, if you look around, you see that the disintegration of the moral standards of our nations, I mean, it's everywhere. Now, is that just natural? No, it's constructed through propaganda, through media, manipulation, deception, to destroy the moral fabric of a nation, to make the nation easy pickings, because it's now shattered. It has no moral compass. You know, in the old story, you know, God kicked Lucifer out. You know, you're a dick, you're a pain in the ass, and so on and so forth, so hit the road. Unfortunately for us, according to the story, he landed here. And basically declared that I will destroy your creation. And part of that creation, by the way, if there's any police or court people listening, that creation included what? Raw milk, raw cheeses, raw foods. And they were there to sustain us. But that's all been taken away. Why? Well, we feed you full of chemicals, it's going to weaken your mind, your spine, and your spirit. Make you easier pickings, lost people, walking dead, fill you full of pharmaceuticals, mess you up some more. And this is what's been going on since and before the Second World War. These things roll into each other. So we are well into the Third World War, which primarily is a spiritual and psychological war. When I spoke with the Muslim youth in my town who held a meeting, an information session after they'd flogged doors with Islam, the religion of peace, and me being the only one that showed up in the meeting, gave us 2 hours basically to chat this through. And they're convinced that they will be the world religion, and that Sharia will be the world law. Now, I had to explain to them that they've been set up for a big, big fall. That their job really is to destroy Christianity. And our politicians and our school boards are all involved in it. That's why the Lord's Prayer was removed from the council chambers and the legislature and the schools. So there'd be a vacuum that could be filled, which is the plan is to fill it with Islam and destroy Christianity. And the churches are all involved in this. We have all the documents to prove that. But what I told the Muslims is that, you know, if you manage to do, and you're getting all the help you could possibly want and all the funding you could possibly ask for from our so-called government, is that when you have done your job, you have basically been set up as useful idiots. Because the world religion will not, according to the United Nations and the globalists and the Satanists and the Luciferians, will not be Islam or Christianity or anything else. It will be earth worship. You see, instead of worshiping or recognizing even the Creator, you will recognize the creation. And the creation is where who landed after he got the boot on the earth. So if you're worshiping the earth, you're intrinsically worshiping Lucifer or Satan or whatever. Why is this world in such turmoil? Why is there no peace? Mainly because we've left law behind us. And we got to get law back, because none of this could happen in law. So we have a lot of work ahead of us. And, you know, there's a lot of people bitching and complaining and fighting and threatening and shooting and killing. Stop it. These people here who have set us up in there want violence. They want it bad. Because that's a trigger for them. That's a mechanism for them. Don't give it to them. Remember, this is a spiritual, psychological war. And you ain't going to win it through violence. So, stiffen up your spine and smarten up your mind. Get up on your moral high horse. Because whether you like it or not, this is the Third World War, and somebody's going to win it. We allowed them to kill hundreds of millions of people through the first two world wars to advance their scheme. The bases are loaded. Strike two. And if we blow this one, it's over. We need to hit the ball so far out of the park that jackass that got kicked out by the Creator gets kicked out by us. And then we can have a peaceful world where we get along together and I hear music, and that's the end for today. We're back Saturday night on Revolution Radio. I guess if I get the courthouse, I will tomorrow. We'll do an update. Everybody have a wonderful evening, and we will killing see people, you in lab, lower class and social slab. They don't matter, genocide, sick from water, sick from air, making money, they don't care, censorship, force of air, fuck them back, it's only for they bomb, they shoot, they kill, they massacre, rape, they burn the kids, no one makes gun, trees, lie to your face, fight, and die, cause God forgives.
This is Ozzy's Skateboard, and you're listening.